All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Nun Ches 158. We are picking up Kuf Nun Zayin 157b, and we are going to pick up 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. So we'll say our shir this morning is sponsored by Greg and Rachel Levitan in honor of the wedding today, tonight, Bisha Tov Mitzlachos, of the daughter Adina to Uri Rabinowitz. We wish a mazel tov to the Rabinowitz family, to the Levitan family, to the Chassan and Kavo. Greg, you and Rachel should be zochet to see beautiful nachas ad mea v'esim shanim tovos. Shkoyach. And our shir is dedicated this morning by Akiva and Leah Wechselbaum in honor of their very dear son-in-law, Shlomo Kanner, wishing him a happy birthday and a direct message from the in-laws, mea kadosh baruch hu, bless you and your beautiful family with good health and happiness ad mea v'esim shana. Love mom and dad. I just want to tell you. Mazel tov, Rav Shlomo, ad mea v'esim shanim tovos. Shkoyach. All right, let's begin. So we'll say, so a lot of beautiful Gemara to do today. So remember, we're picking up. We left off in the middle of an interesting case, which is the following. So remember, we began with the following. So we're talking about, let's go actually back just for a moment, because we actually never closed out the question that we started with yesterday, which was the Shaila of Shmuel. So remember again, Shmuel asked the following question, Di'ikni, what happens if I lend Reuven money, and Reuven says, not only is the property that I own now encumbered to this debt, but Di'ikni, anything that I will acquire in the future, that should also be encumbered by this debt. So both say, so the Shaila is, can you create a present encumbrance on yet to be purchased property, right? Or so that's the fundamental shaila. So the easy resolution, of course, is according to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds that other makna davar shel abal yol. Rabbi Meir holds that halacha lamaisi, you could deal or transact with things that do not yet exist. We have seen many different examples of that according to Rabbi Meir. So, according to Rabbi Meir, the ability to go ahead and say whatever I will acquire should have a lien against and should be encumbered by this debt is not a problem. So the Gemara is trying to figure out what about halacha lemaaseh according to everyone else? Does this concept work or not? So we'll say the Gemara went back and forth in this yesterday. We have not yet reached a true resolution. But the question we left off with yesterday was the following. That halacha lemaaseh, what happens in the following situation? If you hold the ikni, if you hold that a person could create an encumbrance upon yet to be purchased or yet to be owned property. And then I will say, remember, the greatest manifestation of that is what? Is, let's say again, then the debtor goes ahead, borrows the money, right? Borrower borrows the money. Reuven borrows the money from me. Then he says, "Di'ikni, whatever I will acquire will become encumbered." And then remember, he acquires property, then sells off that property. Am I, the creditor, able to go ahead and seize that property from the people to whom he sold it? That's the fundamental shaila. So the Gemara complicates this question a bit more and says, let's say I made the Di'ikni arrangement with two creditors. I borrowed money from two people, and to both of them I said, whatever property I will purchase will become encumbered to this debt. I borrowed money from Reuven, I said it. I borrowed money from Shimon, I said it. Then what happens? The debt is due. I go ahead, I have no property to my name, except for property that I purchased after the time of the debt. So the shaila that the Gemara is trying to figure out is, which creditor is entitled to that? Is it creditor number one, or is it creditor number two? So we saw yesterday machlokes in Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. Rav Nachman ultimately said it's the first creditor who has the rights to the money. Rav Huna says, Yachloku. Rav Huna said they should split it. In other words, they both have equal entitlement to it. And Rabba Bar Avuha also said Yachloku. So we'll say with that. Amar Ravina. Ravina said, now we are 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. Amar Ravina. Mahadura Kama. Dravashi. Amar Lon Rishon Kana. We'll say in the Madura Kamo. Now, we'll explain what this means in just a moment. Madura means literally the first cycle. In the first cycle of Ravashi, he said that the first creditor should acquire the land. Madura Basra, in the second cycle of Ravashi, Amar Yachloku. He said ultimately, again, creditors one and two should split should split the piece of property. Now take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Madura Basra, we'll say it's about 8 lines up from the bottom in the Rashbam. Kishechazer Talmudo Pam Shnia. So we'll say, so this is talking about when Rav Ashi went through Shas the second time. Says the Gemara, Nimsa B'tshuvas Rav Hai, Oper Shabbeinu Chanel, Rav Ashi Chayav Shishim Shana. Rav Ashi lived 60 years. U'bechol Shana, Machzer Talmudo b'shnei chodshei akala Nisan v'Tishrei u'lechashegiu shloshim shana siyem kol Talmudo v'chein asa b'shloshim shanim achronim u'madura kama haynu shloshim shanim rishonu madura basra haynu shloshim shanim achronim. So we'll say Rav Ashi apparently finished Shas twice in his life. One time in his first 30 years, one time in his second 30 years. So what the Gemara, he died at the age of 60. So the Gemara says over here, that when Rav Ashi went through Shas the first time, he felt the halacha over here was that the first creditor would be entitled ultimately to this piece of property. Now, most remember, again, we're speaking of a very specific type of piece of property. We'll call it di'ikni property. Property that the borrower did not possess at the time of the loan, but acquired afterwards. But yet, at the time of the loan, he stipulated that any property I will own should become encumbered by this debt. He did this with two creditors who ultimately gets to keep the property. So Rav Ashi went through Shas the first time, he said the first guy should get it. When he went through the second time, he said ultimately again, Yachloku, they should split it. So we'll say, if you take a look at the Rashbam, so when you think about this for just a moment, so to say that the first one gets it, I understand that, because Lamaisa again, his debt preceded the second one. What's the svara, what's the logic for saying Yachloku, that they should split it? So take a look at the Rashbam, Yachloku, Kol Echa Lefi Ma'osa. So first of all, the Rashbam just points out, Yachloku doesn't literally mean a 50-50 split, but rather it means a proportional split. They each get a percentage of the piece of property proportional to the debt that they are owed. Debebas achos nishtabdu lahem shahari achar beis havaos kna. This is actually fascinating. So what the Gemara says is like this. What the Rashbam, what Rav Ashi the Madura Bar so says is like this. Let's play out this case. Right, I borrow money from Reuven, and I say, Reuven, whatever property I will acquire ultimately will become encumbered to this debt. I borrow that's on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Then what happens? Rosh Chodesh Av. I come to Shimon and say, Shimon, I'm borrowing money. I don't have it. Right, whatever property I will acquire will become encumbered by this debt. Fine. Elul, I now go ahead and buy a piece of property. So now, when I buy that property, there's a simultaneous shibud, there's a simultaneous lien that is created by both of those debts. Even though I borrowed money from Reuven first, and then only afterwards Shimon, the encumbrance on the piece of property devolves upon, or I should say, both encumbrances devolve upon the piece of property at the same time. They both come on the piece of property at the moment that I purchased the property. Therefore, again, it's even though I borrowed money from Reuven first, Reuven's claim against this newly acquired piece of property is no earlier than Shimon's. Their claims devolved upon the property at the same time. So therefore, again, their claims are equal. Because their claims are equal, therefore what? Therefore what? Rav Ashi says, Yachloku, you split it. So this is the tension. So do we look at the fact that at the end of the day, Reuven lent money first, and therefore he has a kedimos, he has a precedence? Or do we say no? The fact that he lent money first makes no difference. We look at when the lien devolved upon a piece of property, and that happens simultaneously for both of them. So we'll say that's the tension. And what is the halacha? Yachloku. And we'll say we paskin like Rav Ashi in the Madura Basra, like Rav Huna, like Rabba. And we would say in a case like this, Yachloku. So ultimately, again, if the borrower were to create a future lien, or I should say a lien against any future properties acquired, and he did that with multiple creditors, we paskin that when he purchases the property, the liens devolve upon the property simultaneously, and therefore, again, they divided, all of the creditors will have an equal proportional share to the newly acquired property. Is that true that we paskin Yachloku? So you must, one second, Shevach, Karkov's Kitzer. Remember, we had this case yesterday. What's the case of Osef Shevach Karkos of being reimbursed for land improvements? So we'll say, so what's the case? Hori Shemachar Sada Lechaveros. Listen to this. I sold the field to my friend. Vishpicha. And my friend improved it. So I sell the field to Reuven. Reuven improves the field. Uba Bachol V'tarfa. And what happens? It turns out I had a creditor. And my creditor comes and seizes the field from Reuven in satisfaction of a previously existing debt. Kishu Goveh. Go back, like Serbo, say, now what happens? The field is seized from Reuven. What does Reuven do? Reuven's going to come back to me and ask to be repaid for the field that was seized. When Reuven comes back to me, he can go ahead and acquire the principal from encumbered property that I own. He could collect the care and the principal from properties that I sold off after the date of the that I sold him the property. That's a shevach min nechasim ben echorin. But ultimately, you know, both say the shevach, the improvements, ultimately, again, will come from nechasim ben echorin, from any what we call properties that I currently own. Vim isha, then I will say, if what we just said before is correct, right, namely that what, that it should only be entitled to chatzi shevach, then chatzi shevach mi boileh, then I will say, ultimately again, Reuven should only be entitled to collect half of the shevach. Now what's happening over here? Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Vim isha chatzi shevach mi boileh, kevan shemachar halove sadehu, because of lo achrayis halov, so we'll say, after I, now I'm the seller, but I'm also called the borrower, because I owe money to another creditor. So I went ahead and I sold the field to Reuven. Then Reuven improves the field. Mimsa, hamalva v'halokeach shnei anoshin belova. So we'll say, it turns out now that there are two people who have a claim against me. Who are the two people who have a claim against me? My creditor, and the purchaser. My creditor and the purchaser. And I will say, they both, interestingly enough, have an encumbrance on the same piece of property, which is what? The land, ultimately, that I sold. Therefore, v'nimtza shevach kanoi lelova, achar shibut shnehen lemalva. B'chovo, ulokeach bekesef miknoso. L'fichach cholkin ha-shevach kidin lova. So we'll say this should be parallel to the previous case. And therefore, again, at most, the purchaser should only be entitled to go ahead and collect up to half of the costs for shevach, for improvement from my property, to which the Gemara says, you're right. My gove, nami diktani chatzi shevach, to which the Gemara says, you're absolutely right. Rather, what it means, ultimately, that he could collect for shevach from the chasim ben echoron, that he could collect from land improvement from my unencumbered or unsold property, that means that he has the right to collect up to half of that amount. Good. So we'll say, so bottom line, how do we paskin over here? How do we paskin? Because we'll say, really understand the most important piece in this entire sugyo is this ability to encumber not yet owned property. When I go ahead and I sell and I lend money to Reuven. So the shaila is, what is the nature of my encumbrance? Does my lien only devolve upon property that Reuven, the borrower, owns now, or anything in the future as well? So also, how do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch, this is in Choshen Mishpat, Kuf Yud Beis Sif Aleph. In Bal Chov Toreif Mimashabadi, Ela Imkein Hayun Nechasim Lelova Bishash Shalava, Umachram Obnasnam Achakach. So under normal circumstances, the halacha is that a balchov, creditor, can only go ahead and seize sold property that was sold by the borrower, if ultimately, again, the borrower has, first of all, if the borrower has no money to his name, no property to his name, and number two, that property was owned by the borrower at the time of the debt. Avalim kinam acher shalava umachram lo nishtabdu lebalchov ve'ino gova osam elakuchos. But say, listen to this. However, if at the end of the day the borrower purchases additional properties after the time of the debt and subsequently sells those properties, I, the creditor, have no right to go ahead and take those properties in satisfaction of the debt that is owed to me. Umihu, however, ba'odam biyad halove, gova mehem, afapi sheknam achashalav. However, again, if they are still in the possession, ultimately, of the borrower, meaning even if he purchased them after the debt, but he still has them, he didn't sell them, then I, the creditor, can collect from those properties. V'im, Shibeid nechasav shekana v'shiyikne. Rabbosai, if the borrower says that I hereby encumber all property that I own and will ever own, the kanoi that I own now, uda'asid anlemikna, anything I will own, as chal hashibud gam amashiyikne achakach. So we'll say, if the borrower stipulates that I am hereby creating a lien against the property that I currently own and any property that I will purchase, that stipulation works, and anything that the borrower purchases ultimately becomes encumbered to this debt. As chala shibud gam ama sheikna achakach. Therefore, again, the shibud, the encumbrance, will devolve upon anything that the borrower will purchase. V'imkana achakach u'machro. And therefore, again, if the borrower purchases something, subsequently sells it off, and then the debt is due, and the borrower has no other property to his name, bal chov gova mimenu. Ultimately, again, the creditor could go after the purchaser of those properties and seize them in satisfaction of his debt. V'dafka, however, Rabbi Yosef, here's the caveat, shepirish lo beferish. But Rabbi Yosef, this type of future lien is not automatic. It only occurs if it's explicitly articulated by the borrower. So Rabbi Yosef, halacha l'maisa, the default is that only property owned by the borrower at the time of the debt is encumbered to the debt. That's the default. The difference that halacha says is that the borrower has what we'll call the de'ikni option. The de'ikni option of Osei means that he could say anything I will acquire does become encumbered by this debt. And so indeed, if he makes that stipulation, it works. It works. So any property that he buys after the date of the actual loan will become encumbered. And even if he subsequently sells it off, if at the time when the debt needs to be repaid he has no money to his name, the borrower could go after the purchasers of that property in order to satisfy his debt. Good. That's halacha l'maisa. Second position. If the ikhnik happens with two different creditors, we paskin yachloku. We paskin that the liens devolve upon the property simultaneously. Therefore, again, halacha l'maisa, they split it. Says the Mishnah. Nafal abayis. We'll say we're still with the house collapse. All right. So this is who's falling on today. So nafal habayis alav va'al ishto. So let's say a house falls upon a man and his wife. Right, and by the way, the Rashbam points out over here, ve'in la banim mimenu. So we'll say this is a case of where there are no children. There are no children. Now, we'll discuss exactly what this means. It means, well, for our purposes, it means he has no children with her. It's possible that he has other children, as we'll see in a moment, but this couple who just died in this house collapse, they don't have any children together. So we'll say, so what happens? So Yarsheha Baal, the people who stand to inherit the husband, which the Rashbam points out is either his father, his brothers, or his sons from another woman. So the Yarsheha Baal, what's their claim? Their claim is Isha Mesa Rishon. The wife died first. Now we'll say, now why is that their claim? V'achakach Mesa Baal. Why is that their claim? That's their claim because if the wife died first, then what? She's inherited by the husband, which means now the husband's estate includes any property that she had, which means that the Yerushim of the Baal now get this. Yerusha Isha Omrim, however, the inheritors of the woman, the inheritors, so again, those would be whoever her closest, I mean, whoever's, it doesn't matter who, the point is, it's whoever her closest surviving relatives are. So Yerusha Isha Omrim, Baal Meis Rishon, the husband died first. And then the wife died. Now, Bosai, you understand that the husband died first and then the wife died. So remember, again, halacha l'maisa, the woman doesn't mean, she doesn't inherit him, because we're talking about a case where there are other inheritors of a husband. But what it does do is what? It allows her property to stay out of the husband's estate. So again, same machlokes about who died first, because the shayla is going to have ramification, legabe Yerusha. So we'll say, just take a look at the Rashi for just a moment. Second line, Isha Meis Rishona, Ve'in Liyarshe Isha Klum. I'm sorry, we read that. Fine. So what's the halacha? Be'sham I say, Yachloku. So we'll say, Be'sham I say, that the heirs of the wife, the heirs of the husband, split the monies. They split the monies. Look at the Rashbam. Be'sham Omri Yachloku, Shari Mamana Mutubu Safiku. So we'll leave that on the side. But Beis Shammai says, any time that you have a doubt regarding money, so the halacha is, what do? Yachloku, you split it. Or Beis Hillel say no. Nechasim bechazkasan. Beis Hillel say, that we'll say we're going to have to define what this term means in the Gemara. But nechasim bechazkasan means the property remains in its chazaka status. So what it sounds like, Beis Hillel is saying, is we kind of maintain the status quo. Whoever had the property retains the property and is then passed down to their respective Yarshim. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. So the Rashbam writes, So the Gemara is going to say, who's Chazaka? What are we talking about over here? So he says, we won't read the rest of the Rashbam. Let's read the rest of the Rashbam. V'hani nechassin dekari be'silo, hey nechseit son barzel. So this is actually important for later on. We're going to see that what Beisilo is referring to about over here is what's called nechseit son barzel. So what's nechseit son barzel? This refers, remember again, to property that a woman brings into a marriage, but the husband guarantees the value. So meaning the husband has the rights to ultimately use this particular property, but let's say he uses it to the point where it's totally diminished. So upon death or divorce, he or his estate are obligated to pay the value, meaning the property is assessed at the time of the beginning of the marriage, it's brought into the marriage, and husband is on the hook for the entire amount. Excuse me. So the Gemara says over here, So we will see over here, finish Rashbam. B'shamayim b'ksuvasa v'achriyusam alav afilu em pichsu pichsu v'mosiru hosiru lo. So both say, so halacha l'maisa, we're going to see is that this reference of Beis Hillel is actually going to refer to the nechseit son barzel. But again, we'll see it more clearly articulated in the Gemara. So yorshe, so nechazim b'cheskas k'suva b'cheskas yorshe haba. So we'll say, when it comes to her k'suva, the ksuva property remains with the yarshim of the husband. Now, we'll say, now understand what this means. The ksuva is a debt that is owed from the husband to the wife. The Gemara posits that that property remains with the husband's estate. And nechassim, and we'll discuss exactly what this means, nechassim ha-nechnasin va-yotzin ima b'chazkas yarshei ha'av. Property that goes out, that comes in and goes out with her, and again, the Rashbam points out over here, hey, nechsei melug, shenaflu mi-beis avein achrisov. So we'll say, remember the difference between nechsei melug and nechsei tzom barzel? Nechsei tzom barzel, the value of the property is guaranteed. So halacha l'maaseh, she brings the nechseit son barzel, it's assessed, that amount was written into the ksuva, upon death of a divorced husband or his estate are obligated to pay that amount to them. Nechseit melug is what? She retains title, he has complete usage, if he uses it up over the duration of the marriage, then what? Right? No. Perhaps not, right? Meaning the idea is, if he uses it up, there's no guarantee. In other words, she retains title, so whatever is left over at the end of the marriage is hers, but should the asset just be totally, what's the word? Depleted, right? It'd be totally depleted. So again, at the end of the day, he's not on the hook for anything. So on Barzel, he's on the hook for the amount. Nechsei Melug, she retains title, he has usage, if something left, fine, nothing. So the Gemara says over here, that when it comes to, that's what's called, nechassim ha-nechnasa v'ayotzin ima. That's nechsei melug. So that's a property that comes in and comes out with her, becheskas yorshev. We'll say now, cheskas yorshev means, it's in the chazaka of those who would inherit her father, which is another way of saying that nechsei melug is under the ownership or under the chazaka of the wife's family. So fine, we'll say, let's analyze this. Really fascinating case. So the Gemara asks, kufnun chesam adeis, becheskas me. So I will say, remember again, Beis Hillel makes a very interesting statement, whereas Beis Shammai says, in this case, I will say, where we don't know who died first, there's only one possible resolution. What's Beis Shammai's resolution? Yachloku. And again, I will say, we understand, it's mamon amutal b'safek, it's money shrouded in doubt, and therefore, again, yachloku. Therefore, halacha l'maaseh, you have to split it. So Beis Hillel says, nechasim bechazkasan. We keep the property in its chazaka. So asks the Gemara, fine, bechazkas mi. Who? And what does that statement mean? So Rabbi Yochanan, so we'll say, remember again, Rabbi Yochanan amar, bechazkas yarshe habal. Rabbi Yochanan says, the property remains in the chazaka of those who inherit the husband. Well, say, if you take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment, now remember, what are we talking about here? That's why the Rashbam Mishnah is very important. We're talking about nechsei tzon barzel. So this is property, ultimately, again, that a woman brought into marriage, that the husband guaranteed the value of this property. So now the Shaila Rabbosai ultimately is, husband, wife die. We don't know who died first. Who retains the nechseit tzon barzel? So Rabbi Yochanan says, Becheskas Yorshin Habal. Ultimately, again, the Yorshin, the inheritors of the husband, they are the ones who retain the Nechseh Tzlom Baza. What's the Pshat? Take a look at the Rashbam. Third line down from the top. Becheskas Yorshin Habal. Shepichsu pichsu lo. Vimosiro siro lo. Viyachal hayolamokhr and hilchach lo dhamma lenechseh lo. Sivosa, listen to this. Since the husband has complete responsibility for the value of these items, and since he even has the right to sell these items, so from a legal perspective, they're considered to be his. Therefore, in a situation like this where we don't know who died first, the wife or the husband, so the husband's Yorshim says, Rabbi Yochanan, hold on to the Nechsei Tzom Barzo. They hold on to that property. Rabbi Loza says, Becheskas Yorshe Isha. Rabbi Loza, on the other hand, says, no. The Nechsei Tzom Barzo, Rabbi Loza, say, that goes to the inheritors of the wife. What's the logic behind that argument? A simple logic, because why? She has title, right? Meaning, legal title. Now, Rabbi Loza, I want to be clear on this. Nechsei Tzom Barzo is an interesting thing, because as we just said before, it's the property of the woman, but really, if you think about it, she doesn't own the property. What she owns is what? The value of the property. Because, Rabbi Loza, the proof to that is, the husband could sell off that property. He's just on the hook for whatever the assessed value of that property was at the time of the marriage. So there's this tension now, when they both die, we don't know who died first. So Beis Hillel says, keep the Nechsei Maluk, the Tzom Barzal property, but in the of the Chazak, whoever had it. So Gemara says, Shkaya, who does that mean? Rabbi Yochanan says, whoever had it, that's the husband. He really is the owner of it. It happens to be that upon death or divorce, he owes her money. In other words, essentially, it is converted into a debt. But the property is really his. What's the proof? I will say, you know, sometimes the greatest test of ownership is ability to sell. We spoke about this earlier. If you have the ability to sell, that's a pretty good testament to the fact that you own it. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, husband could sell it. Therefore, he owns it. Therefore, in this case, where we don't know who died first, we let that property stay in the chazaka of the, or I should say, in the possession of the Yorshe Abal. Rabbi Loza says, what are you talking about? It's hers. I mean, granted, the husband could sell it, but at the end of the day, she owns the value. Because she owns the value, therefore, Rabbi Loza says, it's her chazaka of ownership, and therefore, it should go to her. So the, or I should say, to her Yorshim. But they should split it. They should split it. The Chintani Bar Kafra and Bar Kafra said, Hoil va'alalu va'alalu ba'in li'yoresh, va'alam bar li'yoresh yachloku. And we'll say Bar Kafra said the same thing. Since both ultimately want to assert their right to go ahead and inherit, the only answer we have ultimately is yachloku, they should split it. So we'll say, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Yachloku, first short line. Kedimafarish lakaman, Hoil va'alalu ba'in li'yoresh hakol, va'alalu ba'in li'yoresh hakol. Yachloku shir the shneim yesh tainas chazaka ki depreciousi he han alas lemi be avua vuhu mitok shekiba achrayus alav kinan vahari hein kimamono vahai da amri beisil. So listen to this. So the idea that the Gemara says over here is the truth is they both have an equal claim to it. To a certain degree, she has an equal claim because this is property that was hers already before the marriage that she's bringing from her father's home. He has an equal strong claim. Why? Because he literally owns the property. He could go out and sell, he could do whatever he wants with it. So because literally their claims are of equal strength, therefore we'll say the only resolution in a case like this would be Yachloku. And indeed that's how the Shulchan Aruch Paskins will say in a case like this where husband and wife died together in this house collapse case, and we're not sure again who died first. So we'll say, so it's clear. It's not clear, but Nechsei Tzom Barzel, in this case over here, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that Halacha L'Maaseh Yachloku, the Yorshim of the husband and the Yorshim of the wife will split this particular property. Fine, says the Mishnah. Nafala Bayis Alav Al Imo. So we'll say, listen to this. Let's say the house falls on a man and his mother. So we'll see why this case is different for just a moment. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Nafala Bayis Alav Va'al Imo. Bayis Rashbam Kigon. Shenafala Bayis Al Rachel Ishes Yaakov Va'al Menusa. So we'll say the case over here is the house falls on Rachel, the wife of Yaakov, but Yaakov already passed away. Yaakov passed away beforehand. So Rachel is alone. Va'al Yosef Bina. And Rachel has one son from Yaakov by the name of Yosef. Right? And what happens? V'lohayala od ben miYaakov. But she has no other son, meaning her only child is Yosef from Yaakov. V'lo mishachar. She has no other children. She'akshav tanosein shavos. She'yorshe ha'im kigon acheha me'avia. So we'll say, so in this case over here, what's happening? Mother and son are in the house together. The house collapses on them. We don't know who died first. So Bosei said, the Gemara says over here, you have two competing interests. You have those, the inheritors of the mother and the inheritors of the brother. Now the inheritors of the brother, Bosei, is that even though he's an only son, this Yosef, is an only son of Yaakov and Rachel, but it's possible that what? That Yaakov had another wife, Leah, and he had other paternal brothers. So also remember again, Yerusha is determined by paternal brothers. So there's a group of people vying for Reuven's Yerusha. Those are his brothers ultimately again from another mother, from Leah, from Yaakov and Leah. And Rachel has whoever her father's family is vying for her Yerusha. Now we'll say that the interesting part in this case over here is the final. Let's just finish the Rashbam. Shiyarsha'im kigon echa me'avia omrim ha'ben meis rishon v'himei sachrona v'yirshenu kol mechasel. So we'll say ultimately again, so the inheritors of the mother claim that the son, Yosef, predeceased his mother Rachel. Therefore Rachel, the closest surviving relative, inherits her son, although we'll discuss the mechanics of this in the Gemara, and therefore they stand to inherit the estate. So the Gemara says, V'yarsha ben, and the inheritors of the son, and for example, Kigon Ruvei ben Yaakov Mileya, he has paternal brothers from his father and another wife, Kol anachasim, excuse me, Toin kol nechasim, V'omer Rachel meisa tchila, V'yarash Yosef is kol nechasev, V'achakach meisu v'yarshan kol nechasim. They hold, Rabbi said, that's what? They hold that L'maisa, Rachel died first, Yosef went ahead and inherited his mother. It's fine, Rick, it's a thing. Thank you, it's okay. Yosef went ahead and inherited his mother, and therefore they stand to inherit the entire estate. So I'll say, so what do we do in this case? Back to the Mishnah. Elu v'elu modin shiachloku. So let's say, this is actually quite interesting. Everyone agrees in this case that what? That yachloku, that we split it. Now both say, this is not such a chiddush because this goes back to what we just learned. In all of the previous cases, Rabosai, we did not have equal claims. The reason we did not have equal claims is because remember again how this whole thing started. This whole thing started with competing claims between creditors and inheritors. Creditors and inheritors. So when you have creditors competing against inheritors, the claims are not on the same level. One is claiming alts Yerusha, and one ultimately is claiming alts chovos, alts debts. So again, we'll discuss why this is different than the previous Mishnah, because the previous Mishnah, thank you, seems to be the same way as well, but we'll get into the mechanics of this. The point the Gemara is making over Rabosai is you have two equal claims of Yerusha. When you have two equal claims of Yerusha, there's no way to assert who is more right, who is less right. Therefore, again, the only way, everyone will agree, B'Shem B'Silal, that the halacha over here is Yachloku. You split it. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Moda ani bazu. I admit in this case, Shanachasim mecheskasan. So also Rabbi Akiva argues on this, and Rabbi Akiva says, no, I still agree that in this case, the property should remain in its chazaka state. Whoever had the chazaka should retain the property. Now we'll say, who that means, we'll have to see. Now we'll say, I'll just point out to you, the Rashbam points out, why does Rabbi Akiva use Lashon of Moda ani? Right? Even I admit, he's just mirroring the lashon of the Tanakamo. Because the Tanakamo says, Elu ve'elu modin shiachloku. B'Shem B'Yisrael both say achloku. Rabbi Akiva says, I admit that no, not yachloku, but rather we keep the property ultimately again in the possession of the one who has the chazaka. So listen to this. Amr lo ben Azai. So we'll see, you know, ben Azai was Rabbi Akiva's, we're going to see, was Rabbi Akiva's student, but you know, ben Azai was also Rabbi Akiva's son-in-law. Right? Ben Azai marries Rabbi Akiva's daughter, Rachel. Not Rachel. Forgot Tosis brings down his daughter's name. All right, it'll come to me. So Ben Azai was, we'll see, his Tamid, but was also his son-in-law. So Ben Azai, Amrullah Ben Azai, Al Cholkin Anu Mitztarin, Ela Shabasa Lechalik Alinu Es Hashavin. So Ben Azai says, Rabbi Akiva, isn't it bad enough that we've had Machlokis in the previous Mishnayis? Now you have to go ahead and make Machlokis in the Mishnah where everybody agrees? So Ben Azai saying to Rabbi Akiva, you know, we've been dealing with this machlokis, B'Shem B'Silo, all these previous Mishnahs, finally we come to a Mishnah where everyone agrees and you have to stir the machlokis pot and say that they disagree over here. So we'll discuss exactly what the nature of that statement means. But says the Gemara, B'cheskas mi. So we'll say, says the Gemara, let's analyze this. So Rabbi Akiva comes along and says that even in this case where the house falls on the son and the mother, Rabbi Akiva paskins, whereas the Tanakhama says, according to B'Shem B'Silo, Yachloku, they split the estate, meaning the inheritors split the estate property. Rabbi Akiva says the property remains in the chazak of the one who had it. Who does that mean? So Rabbi Ila Amar, B'cheskas Yarshayim. So Rabbi Ila Rabosei says that ultimately again, it remains in the possession of those who would inherit the mother, the mother's inheritors. We'll say, you'll see, we'll take a quick look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam says, "Becheskas Yerusha'im," it's like right in the middle of the wide lines. As we will explain later on, So we're going to see what this means is the following. One, remember again, the case over here is that Rachel, the wife, the mother, was widowed already from her husband Yaakov. So she has possession of her property, whatever her property is, her nechse meluk, her nechse tzom barzel, whatever ksuva she has, that's hers. I will say she has a tribal affiliation. While she was married, her tribal affiliation might have been that of her husband. Now that her husband has died, her tribal affiliation is the tribe ultimately of her father. Because she's been a widow, the chazoka is that her tribe, her shevet, owns that property. Her shevet, while she, right, owns that property. So therefore, again, Rabbi Elo says in this case, where mother and son died, and we don't know who died first, so what do we say? We say, keep the property in its chazaka. The chazaka is with Yarshe Ha'im, those who will inherit the mother, because her tribe, her extended family, already has the chazaka of ownership. Rabbi Zera says, no, Becheskas Yarshe Ha'im. Rabbi Zera says that it should ultimately remain in the chazaka, in the possession of those who will inherit the son. Well, as I take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment, becheskas yorshe haben, the mishemes baila haya haben roy the yorsha kodim lakol krovei mitzalav. We'll say no. The other opinion, namely Rabbi Zera, says that the property goes to the son's inheritors. Why? Because once the father dies, once Yaakov died, we'll say, who was Rachel's first position inheritor? Who was her first position inheritor? Ultimately, it was her son, Yosef. So because of that, even during her lifetime, he has a certain chazaka on that property. Because he's a first possession inheritor, chazaka on the property, because of that, in this case of doubt, where we are not sure exactly who it is that died first, it is Reuven's inheritors that have the first right, ultimately, again, to the deceased mother's estate. We establish an inheritance line. So even before she dies, there's an inheritance. Meaning, it's just a de facto, the Gemara says it's not. Because in cases of doubt, the last thing we could do is we could rely on the last known chazaka. The last known chazaka before they died is that a son inherits his mother. So in this case where we don't know the order of death, you could only default back to the previously established chazaka, which was that the son was the first position creditor of the mother. So the Gemara says, Ki sadak Rabbi Zera, kam b'shitas id Rabbi Ila. So listen to this. When Rabbi Zera Kisalik, when he went up, he made Aliyah. Rabbi Zera went from Eretz Yisrael, from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and what happens? He changed his mind. He reversed his position, and he paskin like Rabbi Ila. Namely, again, that the property remains with the Yarshe Ha'im. That her Shevet has a Chazaka, therefore the property remains, their property remains with her family. So Rabbi Zera reversed his position to Eretz Yisrael. So come Rabbi Bishita, say Rabbi Zera. So we'll say, so Rabbi came along, and he also upheld the Shita of Rabbi Zera. Of Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Zera said, what do you see from here? Shema mino, avira deretz Yisrael machkim. I say, what do you see from here? I credit ultimately again this reversal in my position, this newfound position, to the heir of Eretz Yisrael. The heir of Eretz Yisrael just endows one with wisdom. But I say, you breathe in that holy air and just literally, just allowing your lungs and your soul and your heart to be oxygenated through the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael changes who you are. I will say, you don't need the Gemara to tell you this, because you know it. Because the moment you step off the plane and you breathe, even when you're breathing cabin air of Eretz Yisrael, right? Even cabin air of Eretz Yisrael is better than any other air to be found in the world. Now let's say, so again, Avidar Yisrael Machkin. So there's a lot to say about this, we won't get into this. Let's look at the Rashi for just a moment. Am Rabbi Zera Shlaminach, Avidar Yisrael Machkin, Shemesha Alisi Eretz Yisrael, Nasati Eslibi Lazez Meshitasi Arishan, Vlamo Dami Amidas Advarim. When I went, so we'll say, this is actually an amazing Gemara. He's saying, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, listen to these words. Nasati eslibi lotzeis mishitasi harishona. I opened my heart and allowed myself to leave my previously held opinions, the lamod alamitas hadvarim, and to ultimately again allow myself to finally see the truth, even though it required a reversal of my opinion. But so you understand the incredible metaphoric understanding in this as well, that the greatness of Eretz Yisrael is that Eretz Yisrael sometimes allows you a certain level of vision and understanding about yourself and about life that you just don't have anywhere else. Sometimes we go through life and we have our shitos. We have our shitos. This is what I am. This is what I do. This is the MS. This is where I have to get. And we get so caught up in those shitos that sometimes we lose out the amitas hadvarim. Sometimes a person just has the ability to breathe air of Eretz Yisrael, has the ability to be cocooned in that beautiful kedusha of the land. And like Rabbi Zera says, Shemeshalisi l'Eretz Yisrael. I just had the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael. Nasati eslibi lotes mishitasi harishona. It gave me the strength to leave my initial opinions and conceptions. I will say some of us spend life locked in shitasenu harishona. We pick a shita, and that's it. Full throttle. And we never take time to say, one second, is this the right shita? And if it was the right shita, it might have been good 10 years ago. It might have been good 20 years ago. But is it good for me now? And sometimes we get so wrapped up in the shita that at the end of the day, I just don't rethink life. Rabbi Zera says, I was that guy. Where was Rabbi Zera? Rabbi Zera wasn't hanging out in bad places. He was in the yeshiva in Bavel. Right? But Lamaisi said, I got wrapped up in my shita. Only when I came to Eretz Yisrael, I breathed in the air, I opened my eyes, opened my heart, opened my soul, and recognized a new perspective in life. Those words of the Rashi Rabbi say are so healing. They're so v'lamod alamitas hadar. Rabbi say, life is all about examining your shitos. Sometimes we become so convinced that the way we're living and what we're doing and our priorities are correct that we never take the time to assess them. Sometimes you need to go to Eretz Yisrael, or at least if you can't go with your body, like Rabbi Nachman says, your neshama could be anywhere you want. So if you want to be in Eretz Yisrael, you could close your eyes and your neshama could be there in the blink of an eye, in just a moment. Sometimes you have to breathe in its air, literally or figuratively, and to examine the hierarchies of life. Mostly just one more line and we'll have to stop. They both say, what's the reason for this? Ultimately, again, why would we say that the property remains with the chazak of the mother? Since at the end of the day, the chazaka of the mother is that this property, since she has been widowed, is in the chazaka of her shevet. Therefore, I will say that chazaka remains, and therefore, in this case, the maisa, we don't know who died first, who died second, we establish the property with the yersh sheha'im, because she has the chazaka ultimately, again, of being part of her shevet. Stop over here. Shkoyach.